This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
We're asking you which second-year quarterback will have the best season next year. Is it going to be Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Mac Jones? The list goes on. Zach Wilson, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. I had mentioned this is Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance, coming to you live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. Guys, I want to get back into the LeBron James situation. Good morning, Max. Good morning, everybody. We have so much to do, so little time. We only have three more hours to get all this in.
Just a little coffee this morning. All right, cheers.
Go ahead. In other words, that's a message to you, Max. Slow it down. We're going to get there. That's what Jay's trying to tell you. We got 3 hours. We're going to eventually get there.
I'm on 4 hours sleep and 6 shots of espresso. So now you know. All right, look.
I'll pass on the coffee all day long, man.
Yeah.
You had some the other day, though.
How'd that coffee work out for you last time after you left the show?
I was fine. It didn't bother me, I don't think. Maybe it's affecting me now. I don't know. But it's not bothering me.
Days later.
Now, like 10 days later?
Hey, who knows? I mean, I'm fine. It was. Yeah, it was just.
Passes through your system in four hours. And I mean, yeah, passes through your system.
I think I was okay. That wasn't what was passing through my system, trust me. It was some other stuff that had nothing to do with coffee, didn't rhyme with coffee. It was. Yeah.
Did it rhyme with tequila?
Yes, that is right.
It rhymed with tequila.
Vibes.
That was a little bit different.
You need that sauna to help that pass through the system.
But I actually, you know what's so funny? Is I actually just thought of that when you said this, Max and Jay, about coffee and tequila and whatever. I've been lying because I drink espresso martini with tequila instead of vodka.
Okay, you're a coffee drinker.
No, I'm not a coffee. It's different. That's different.
You know, an espresso martini,
you're a coffee drinker.
No, you're taking the caffeine from the coffee.
Yes, you are.
I don't think that caffeine that's in that coffee with that tequila is going to keep me up.
No, it's going to balance. That's what I like about them. I'll drink those because it balances it out so I could stay awake. Nowadays, I have a drink or two. I want to go to sleep.
It's still coffee.
I'm talking about the coffee like in your black mug type coffee.
But the alcohol is counteracting the caffeine is what he's saying.
Yes, it's fine that it can counteract, but you're still getting caffeine.
All right. Somebody should chime in when they get a chance to answer that question. Is espresso martini with tequila the same as drinking your coffee and your espresso? Max.
I have another question for you, Key. Maybe we can do this a little later in the show. You might go against this one. This might prove what Jay is saying. If you have vodka Red Bull, are you having a Red Bull?
No.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
And Max, what do you talk about counteracting each other? Tequila is an upper. Caffeine is an upper.
No. Tequila is a downer. All alcohols are downers. Alcohol's downers.
Tequila's never got me down. I don't know about you.
Hey, look.
I'm going to take a nap. I'm ready to turn the hell up. What are you talking about?
I'm good for another 10 hours on the tequila.
That's what I'm saying.
Now, after it's all over with and they turn on the lights, I might go back and crash and burn, but that's about all.
That's what caffeine is. Good point.
All right, back to sports. Let's go.
Now we're ready, Max. Get into your point.
Now we only have like 10 seconds. No, we have some time. Listen, Key, you said something that sparked something in my brain when you were like, the Lakers. Let's backtrack here. Stephen A. yesterday said on First Take, the Lakers should strongly consider trading LeBron James. And we talked about that for a while. Here's the upside. Here's the downside. One of the things that you mentioned, Key, and you have long said, and I agree with you, they have the scoops of ice cream in the sundae. You know, LeBron, AD. They just need to add the right kind of condiments around it, right? I'm with you on that. But you also played some devil's advocate here and said, look, if they trade LeBron, this is why. You get an influx of young talent. Look around the league, the Celtics, and you started naming teams. They're getting it done. They're getting it done. And I had a Keyshawn Johnson reaction to that in my own mind. Are they really getting it done, though? I always hear Key say, but are they really doing that, though? Because those teams are all struggling and striving and trying maybe one day to grab a ring, right? That's never been the Lakers formula. Like, if the Heat get one this year, it's like the Pistons got a couple back in the day or in 04. It's that style of championship. The Lakers let all the other teams try to develop and maybe one day. And meantime, they identify who are the two best players in the league. Why don't we get those guys together, right? Two of the five best players in the league. So if they did trade LeBron and got all this in, that maybe one day they could build up. But they got that dude right now. And they got him with AD, and there's a health concern for sure. But, Key, that's the Lakers' way. They got the biggest star in the sport, and he can still ball. They don't trade that guy.
Well, I would say – what I would say, Max, is that the Lakers historically has always gone out and got a big fish. But they also drafted well, whether it was James Worthy, whether it was Byron Scott, whether it was Magic Kobe. Johnson – switching, flipping for Kobe, whatever it was, they've always done those sort of things. What I am saying is, if in fact they were or they are strongly considering trading LeBron James to get younger like these other teams, and you say, well, I would say, well, you know, are they really getting it done? That is a fact that are they really getting it done? I would say they're headed in the right direction, Boston is. I would say Memphis is headed in the right direction. Minnesota's headed in the right direction. Doesn't mean that they're there yet. It just means they're headed in the right direction. The Phoenix Suns are headed in the right direction. The one thing they went out and did is they got Chris Paul. But that Booker and Ayton, those are young pieces. The Lakers can do that and then grab or keep a LeBron. Okay, let's keep LeBron, and then let's take those other young pieces and let's get the young pieces something they didn't want to do a year ago. They elected not to do that. Now you have the opportunity to make it right, keep a LeBron James, move all the other pieces, and get some young guys around LeBron and build it that way. Because if you look at Phoenix, Chris Paul's got 2 years left, right? Mm-hmm. Let's call it 2 years. Eventually, it's going to be about Ayton and about Booker. And the Lakers can do the same exact thing and be relevant again in a heartbeat.
Jay, how do they get that done without moving LeBron? I think AD's trade value is lower than it ought to be right now, so that doesn't make a lot of sense. I do think Westbrook on an expiring deal can net you some nice complementary pieces, but it is unclear to me how the Lakers come up with that second young star by standing pat, you know?
I think you look for ancillary pieces around those big three if you can't move them. I mean, frankly, AD was hurt all this year. LeBron had some injuries. Russell was the shell of himself. Hopefully he could be settled down. But just go back to the strongly considered a trade for LeBron James. I've strongly considered doing a lot of things in my life. I didn't do them. Like, I considered one time going skydiving. I was like, oh, I don't have a high risk tolerance. Yeah, I'm not going to do it. That sounds stupid.
What's the point?
I'm not going to do it. Like, why?
What's the point?
Yeah, I'm good on that.
Thank you, Keith. So let's go back to this thing about he is one of the best players in basketball. His name was associated in the MVP race this year. So I hear what the thought of it may seem like, but in reality, man, like, you're not going to trade a valuable asset like that who is still, to a degree, in his prime, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense to me?
Yeah, and again, like, I just think of LeBron, AD, and whatever Westbrook's expiring, like $47 million, if I'm a team with two or three nice mid-level players, they got another 2 or 3 years on their deal, I want to get out of it because I think I can sign a free agent or I want flexibility, and I'm really kind of stuck on a playoff treadmill in the first round, I'm not going to get any better. If I can clear them off my books, but they're still kind of useful players, by bringing in Westbrook, then he becomes a free agent and I've cleared that money, that means the Lakers can acquire those guys, Key.
Yeah, no, you're right, but it's a lot of other things that play with this whole LeBron scenario type situation. You still got the losing of power in the front office of Clutch and Rich Paul and LeBron. They kind of losing some of that steam. So does that factor into wanting to exit? Is that factor in wanting to move him? I mean, you know, you got to think of that.
Mm-hmm. Are they losing it, or do they just not want to touch it because it's a mess right now? Or is that kind of the same thing or the same result? Keyshawn, J. Will and Max is presented by Progressive Insurance. Get a business insurance quote online in as little as 6 minutes. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com. Only one star player showed up, but nobody else did, guys. We'll find out why next on ESPN Radio Sirius XM Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, the podcast.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Electric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Electric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. And we are joined, guys, by Coach Seth Greenberg, ESPN basketball analyst nowadays. What's up, Coach? He's giving you the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. How are you, Coach?
Life is good. Great games last night. Can't complain. I mean, obviously, you saw absolute show in first half with Luka, and you saw probably the demise of the Sixers as they play 5 versus 4, basically.
Yeah. Pascal Siakam, the MVP for the Heat so far. Listen, really? Coach, you brought up Luka. Listen to what Jason Kidd have to say about Luka after the game.
Yeah, he had a great game, but no one else showed. So, you know, we got to get other guys, shooting the ball better. We can't win with just him out there scoring 30 a night, not this time of the year. And we're playing the best team in the league. And so we got to get other guys going.
Who's that on, Coach? Like, we've been criticizing Harden a lot, and he looks a little past it. Luka has some Harden in his game, right? Like, without him on the floor, Brunson steps up. Now Luka's back, and people are kind of watching him. Who's that on? Is that on the rest of the team, or is that on Luka? Does Luka need to change?
He's got to be inclusive. He's got to find a way to get others involved. Look, Brunson getting in foul trouble at the beginning of the game is a problem, and Brunson's having a problem scoring over the size right now of the Suns is a problem. But look, Dorian Finney-Smith gets 3 fouls early. Obviously, Brunson gets 3 fouls early. That takes them out of a rhythm. So Luka has to do more. I agree, someone else has got to step up. Then what he did in the first half, someone else has got to step up and take a little pressure off him. He's got to kind of get rid of the ball a little bit earlier some. But they also, I mean, what Jason Kidd didn't address is Luka's got to guard someone. Like, they're just putting him in a ball screen and then attacking him. 1.81 points per possession.
Nuts.
In the second half, putting him in ball screen. So, you know, he's got to be better defensively. Coaching is great in the playoffs. I mean, that's the greatest thing about NBA basketball. You watch the playoffs, coaching is great, and people are going to exploit weaknesses. And Luka defensively has become a weakness.
Hey, I completely get that Phoenix is targeting Luka. You're going to make the other team's best offensive player guard defensively to take his legs away from the offensive end, Seth. But at the end of the day, if I'm Luka Doncic and I'm his agent, Bill Duffy, who is with William Morris Endeavor, I'm sitting there looking at this whole thing saying, hey, Jalen Brunson is a good player. He's a guy that can – he should be a guy that comes off the bench, right? Or I know he's going to end up starting for an NBA team, but he's a guy who's solid each and every night. Spencer Dinwiddie, a decent scorer. I need another superstar in Dallas with me. And if I can't get one, then maybe it's time that I start thinking about other cities that I can be at. And I love Mark Cuban. I think he's one of the most progressive leaders we have in the game of basketball, actually in any sport. But if you trade Kristaps Porzingis and you're looking at who else is going to be a suitable player next to Luka, I need another all-star
next to him so he can get to a point where they're talking about them winning championships, because they look like they got exposed last night for the second game in a row against a really good Suns team that is set up to win a championship.
Look, I can't argue with you, Jay. Well, I mean, every team would like to have two guys that absolutely can take over a game. We're seeing it in each and every one of the series. I mean, you know, let's face it. But, yeah, I think that's probably the they're still their roster is a work in progress. I think they've got the role players in place. Dorian Finney-Smith is going to defend. He's going to be a ball mover. Munson can get in the lane some. Brunson, I should say. They need another player. But they also probably, when they get that next guy, Jay Wilder, he's going to have to change a little bit. As good as Luka is, he's going to have to change a little bit. The ball can't get stuck because they end up a lot of times with four guys watching one, and he makes – the first half was a joke. I mean, it was a joke. The shots he was making, the plays he's making, his footwork, his fearlessness. But you get another superstar, and that superstar is going to hold him accountable to check people also. Look, I love his game. I mean, like, I mean, it's old school, tough, physical. He's so strong. He's so patient. But I go back to, yeah, they do it. I agree with you. They need another superstar or another guy that he can rely on going to get in 2022. But he's got to check someone, man. I mean, because in the second half, they wore him out. And that was great. That was great coaching. Let's face it. You know, how do you defend Luka Doncic? You make him defend every single possession, and you wear him down. That's what happened in the second half.
The coach, Seth Greenberg, ESPN basketball analyst, joining us this morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Coach, enough about the Mavericks, right? We keep talking about what they need to do and all this and that. How about giving the Suns some love? How good are the Suns? Is this their year to get it done with Chris Paul or not?
Chris Paul, man. Whew. I mean, Chris Paul and Ayton's improvement offensively especially. I mean, Ayton coming out, run the floor, yeah, but he's catching.
Defensively, they gave him the business last night, though, too. Luka got the business.
Yeah, but I look at Chris Paul. He's 37 years old.
It's unbelievable.
He's going right. I'm telling you, he's going right.
Nothing you can do about that.
They tried to keep him left, and he made a couple of plays going to his left hand. But his ability to make plays for everyone. His ability, you know, a couple of years back, I thought he lost a step. He couldn't finish a game off. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't shoot from three. I didn't think he had his legs. Man, was I wrong. I mean, come on, man. I mean, like what he's doing right now, there he is pulling up, going left. I mean, is unbelievable. No one reads the floor better than Chris Paul. Jay Will, can you remember a guard that sees all five defenders in every situation better than Chris Paul?
No, Seth, you know what the thing about him is, too, and Key made mention of this the other day, and I've always known it, we just never articulated it as much. The dude gets to his right hand every time.
That's unbelievable.
And every ball screen, he finds a way to get that ball in his right hand, and that's what he makes a play with, but it's unstoppable because his precision and his awareness is off the charts.
Yeah, and that little sidestep he has where he just creates a little bit of space. It's not a step back. It's a kind of a sidestep to create separation. And then he keeps it just the right amount of time if he wants to throw the lob or he wants to skip it. And the other thing is they can play off of Chris Paul, the Suns. They also can play off their sets and getting Booker in the action where he's coming off those wide pin downs. Like there'll be a dribble hand off a ball screen. Paul will be going one direction. And all of a sudden Booker will come off a wide pin down and knock down a jumper. And he's become such a tough matchup.
If Chris Paul wins a championship, I think about like – if Larry Brown could design a point guard, right, it would be Chris Paul. Perfect. Like, that's exactly what you're looking for. If he wins a championship, considering how well-rounded he is as a point guard, let's take Magic out of this. He's a 6'8" and the best ever, right? Is that the best you've seen as a pure point guard? If he adds the championship feather in his cap, it's still playing at an incredible level?
I'm not bringing Bob Cousy into the conversation.
Yeah, right.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
He is unique in that he's a new wave best point guard in limiting Magic because I call him ball guards. Mm-hmm. Listen, in the old days, a point guard was a facilitator.
Right.
I mean, let's face it. A point guard was a guy that came off ball screen, read defender, make a play, was advanced the ball in transition, passed the ball on time, on target, got you into your sets. Chris Paul,
at the
flip of a switch, all right, is going to drop 30. Like, all right, John Stockton was a perfect example of a guy that he got the ball anywhere he wanted, anytime he wanted, to who he needed to get the ball. Chris Paul can drop 30. And that's the thing, that his evolution at his age, sick, to me, is unbelievable. Here's a bigger question, all right? They win it all, and who knows? How many more years does he go? Is he like Tom Brady?
I don't see him.
I mean, like, at that position.
He's turning 37 this year.
Yeah, this, I think
37.
Tomorrow.
That's
playing
crazy.
As well
to
as
me.
He's ever played.
So, Seth, Mike Greenberg said yesterday.
No relation.
No relation at all to you or Max. Said yesterday, if you were to redo the 2018 draft, you would take Luka first over Ayton. I don't know if I like that. I wouldn't do. I think Ayton's perfect for this team. But I guess I would ask you, Seth, if the Suns would actually take Luka in that position, or even a Trae Young over Ayton, is he still the best guy for this team?
I wouldn't take Trae Young, and as good as Trae Young is in his range and his facilitating. Look, you need a front court guy that can defend ball screens, step out, and recover back. You need a front court guy that can rebound and run. You need a front court guy that, with his athleticism and his improvement, and again, you're talking about a guy came in the league at 19 years old. 19 years old. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could see Luka. I wouldn't see anyone else. And quite honestly, with the way that team was built with Booker, I'm not sure Booker, Paul, and Luka would work.
Yeah, Luka, you know, you mentioned what the Mavs need around Luka, and I think it's a little bit overstated what they don't have. Brunson, Dinwiddie, and if Hardaway Jr. is healthy, like, for a non-superstars surrounding him, that's pretty damn good in terms of guys
Hardaway,
who can get
Hardaway
it done.
Hardaway's scoring, Max. I think they're missing because Hardaway is a guy who can drop 20. I mean, right. Hardaway's scoring is a huge miss because he complements Luka.
So, but we got to see now, players, to your point, you don't know if Luka would work on that Suns team. We got to see Luka work with other guys who also need the ball where the stuff moves.
Well, Luka wouldn't. CP3 wouldn't be on that team because Luka would have been there.
Yep.
So, by the way, it would have been Luka and Devin Booker, and you would have had Monte Williams, who would have probably had a different style than what's been around Luka in Dallas. So,
and who knows what DeAndre Ayton is?
Because you'd be
without
wasting
Chris
Booker's
Paul,
ability to play without the ball. I mean, because Booker's really good. I mean, he's really good coming off. He's good with the ball. He's good any which way, but coming off those screens, he gets behind the ball and is shot ready, like, boom. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I got a draft pick for you. You're sitting at one right now. Right now today, is it Jimmy Butler or is it James Harden?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Who and why?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's my deal on Harden. Harden isn't who he was. I'm plain and simple. Look, to win in the playoffs, you got to be in world-class shape. He's not in world-class shape. He can't get by anyone. And I'll tell you the other thing is, and Jay, well, you know this because you were a great player. When you're missing right, left, short, long, it all comes down to your footwork and your preparation. Right? Like, every one of his misses is different. And then the way the game's officiated, where he can't draw the contact the way he did in terms of that step back where you jump into the defender. I look at Harden, I say, I would say Jimmy Butler because you know what you're getting every single night.
Yeah.
On both sides. Plain and simple. You know what you're going to get every single night. James Harden, unless he gets in world-class shape, he's a really good player. He's not a great player. He's not – like, Tyrese Maxey's the guy that had his chance to be a great player in that team. I like the way Tobias Harris is playing right now. Look, the Sixers are playing, Jay, well, 5-4 without Embiid. Uh-huh. They're playing without – they're playing on both ends, 5-4. Because they have no rim protection. People are just getting right into the lane, scoring anytime they wanted. And then offensively, you know, there's no one to take pressure to create. Like, you know, you play with Embiid, he creates shots just by being on the floor.
Yeah, here's the downside of eating your way out of two towns, right? Like Jimmy Butler, to get out of town, had to fall out of shape, but he did it 2 years in a row.
Seth, great, great point, by the way. And just for our listeners, so yesterday, Seth, I got up about 300 shots at this place called, you know, Shoot 360, just playing around with kids and shooting on my own in general. Right, and I'm just curious, like, going through that second time I've got up shots to a degree, like, in that environment. And a lot of my misses were side of the left rim, side of the right rim, short, some long on different spots of the back rim because I haven't been getting the reps. Yeah. But we all know when you get the reps on a daily basis, a lot of reps, your misses are typically in one location.
Yeah.
Like, it's not all over. That's a great point, man. It talks about how James works on his game on top of his conditioning, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's a guy that I thought was in love with the game way back. And, like, I've always said this. When guys get out of shape, it's a lack of respect for their teammates. It's a lack of respect for the, you know, impacting winning. Like, he's got to get in world-class shape. He's got to, like, being in great shape. You can't improve. I used to say to Star
Wars. What if he is in shape, though, Seth? What
well, he's in shape. He's in shape. He's looking shape. More like me than he does like Jay Will.
He's in a shape.
Well, we've seen him in the past look like that, though.
He is
and
a shape.
Still
yeah, in the past. He's getting older, Key.
No,
why
I
ain't moving the
no,
same
I
way.
Get it.
No, not in the past
he,
1 year, Key.
What
one year with Brooklyn.
What if he is in shape, though, Coach? And that's just what it is.
If that's who he is, then he's, you know what, he's a nice player. He's a guy that can get 20 on a night. He's a guy that can facilitate. He still has a really, really high basketball IQ. Gets rid of the ball.
Because what
time
of the year is this, Jay? What week would this be in, like, basketball, whatever? This is like
football,
the playoffs.
In football?
No, this is the playoffs. If you ain't in shape by now, Coach, you ain't getting in the
yeah,
shape.
That's exactly it.
It's exactly it. So whose responsibility is that? Like, it's not Doc's responsibility to get him in shape right now. You know what it is? You take ownership in your body. You take ownership in being in world-class shape for the playoffs so you can compete at the highest level, so you can play the minutes you need to play in the playoffs.
Seems to me he was part of the strategy to get out of town, both to get to Brooklyn and to get to Philly, was to fall out of shape. Right? That was one of the reasons they move on from him. Now he's got to get back in. He's got to get back into shape 2 years in a row. No D'Antoni, no shooters, now no Embiid, no more playoff wins either. I got news for everybody.
Like, let me ask Jay Will and Key, when you were competing at the highest level, you guys competed at the very, very highest level, world-class athletes, all right? If you know what that feels like in terms of your body.
Yeah.
So he, like to me, don't you guys think, and you guys were the best of the best, like, he knows he's not in shape.
Yep.
So why isn't he doing something about it?
Well, here's the thing, Seth. You can't do anything about it right now, Key, because in order for you to be in playoff shape, that shape starts during the off season.
Yeah,
it doesn't start during
the
season.
Their off season is going to start in a couple games.
I just would think, though, Coach, that he can run. He's playing basketball. He's going up and down the court. You can't get into shape. You can't burn off them calories.
It all depends on what you're doing once you leave the court.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's
true. I walk 10 miles a day. I should be in a lot better shape than I am right now.
Turn up.
The problem is I'm going in there and have a piece of pound cake and a Diet Coke.
Why the Diet Coke?
And I don't think he's having a piece of pound cake and a Diet Coke.
A big move in the NFL that went under the radar. Thank you, Coach. The Bears national scout, Chris Prescott, is no longer with the team after making comments about second-round pick Jaquan Brisker. Okay? Prescott said of Brisker, according to ESPN Bears reporter Courtney Cronin, here's a quote, he's a, what would we call it, PhD, poor, hungry, and desperate. Football is his life. This is this kid's life. There's a lot to like about that when you see a guy who's so passionate about football, end quote. Cronin wrote in a follow-up tweet that Prescott was discussing Brisker's playing mentality. This is a quote. It's how he communicates. You feel a tough, hard-nosed kid, Prescott said, according to Cronin. Your thoughts, Key?
You know, I think in certain situations, that would drive me crazy if I didn't understand what the scout was saying. I've referred to many times about the difference in PhD, poor, hungry, and desperate, athletes versus silver spoon athletes. I was a PhD, okay? I was poor, I was hungry, and I was desperate to get it done. I wanted my education from USC, but at the same time, I wanted to kick open the door in the National Football League, and nothing was going to stop me from getting my family out of poverty to the next level. You know that song, wherever they say I was Project Baby, now I live in Calabasas? That's what I'm talking about. So I really don't. It's not for me, and I'm the last dude on this earth that's going to put up with any bigotry, racism, any underlying, undertone BS from anybody. But I also understand how scouts, their language, I also understand what he's saying. Justin Fields wouldn't be in the position if he wasn't pushing himself to get out of whatever situations he was in to help his family growing up. Great athletes, if you just take a look at it, both white and black, when you got a silver spoon in your mouth, you can walk away from the game. Andrew Luck, so to speak, nothing against Andrew Luck, but Andrew Luck can make a decision because he grew up different than me. okay, different than Justin Fields and many other black athletes that come a long ways. He can make that decision to just walk away from the game. It didn't need to do certain things if it didn't work out for him. Myself and Justin Fields, we can't, you know? And so
if we took race out of it, Key, and said and made it about a white player, let's say back in the day he came out of the Dust Bowl or something, right?
Yeah.
Real impoverished circumstances. And let's make him a fighter instead of a football player. If someone wrote that, PhD, poor, hungry, desperate, I don't think anyone would bat an eye. It stands to reason that from a more desperate circumstance, when there are fewer options,
absolutely,
and also just a certain 100%. Kind of hunger you grow up with, that 100%. In a full contact sport, in a violent sport, you are willing to take a little more, to give a little more. I get it.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. When you think about it, athletes that grow up, as I said before, a certain way, they're not hungry and desperate. So they don't always tend to be the best guys.
Yeah, we're generalizing here, by the way. There are, Jay, Muhammad Ali was from, by the standards of his time and place, a more middle-class background or working-class background than, say, Joe Frazier. That doesn't mean he's going to lose to Joe Frazier, right? You could still be the greatest of all time. But as a group, if you took more affluent people, you would think that in a sport that requires incredible mental discipline to get yourself to do things physically, that group would probably not perform, my intuition would be, as well as the other group that needs it more, right?
Yeah, I think I need to know more about the background of Chris Prescott before I could really make any comment on it. I mean, for me, I think he could have said it differently, but I get the overall gist of what he was saying. But I think as long as there's context provided that there's not a history of this, then I don't have a problem with it.
Well, CJ, what I would say, though, as you look at who he was talking about and Jaquan Brisker, I look at it as not all scouts, but that's how scouts conversations go. I had a conversation with a scout a year ago, and he was talking about a white kid from, I think it was Montana State, and we were having a conversation. And the kid was on the draft board, and they were talking about drafting, maybe, maybe not. And he said, man, you know, the guy is 5'11", you know, 200 pounds, good athlete, good this, but his parents didn't help him because of the DNA. I didn't take that and look at it and go, oh, well, I need to check his background, because that's the way these scouts talk. Yeah. They talk like that. That is the way that they do things. You know, poor, hungry, and desperate, I don't look at it as, demeaning the kid or anything like that. I just don't.
I appreciate this increased sensitivity nowadays to not wanting to even take steps towards generalizations that are harmful to groups of people, especially those people who have been marginalized, right? However, there is a point at which that sensitivity overflows to the point where now people can lose their jobs over, and I understand your hesitation, Jay, to pass judgment until you have more of the facts about the person who said this background, but on its face, I don't see a fireable offense or an offensive comment here. Now, if you contextualized it differently and told me some other stuff, maybe I would feel different, but the idea that people who come from less and are hungrier is something that has been endemic in American popular culture
Max, that's why I ended my conclusion with saying I don't have a problem with it. Now, if you're saying that in the past there were statements that seemed similar that were around race, then like, all right, now there's like a book of evidence, right, leading into this. Mm-hmm. But if that's not the case, just talking about football.
Yeah, if we look, man, here's what I would say. If I almost called him John Ireland, not John Ireland, but Jeff Ireland, who is the assistant general manager of the New Orleans Saints when he was the general manager of the Miami Dolphins, and he interviewed Dez Bryant, and he asked Dez Bryant if his mom was a prostitute in the past, that is a problem for me.
Right.
This isn't a problem for
right.
me. This is not a problem for me, because Jaquan Brisker certainly is a guy that runs through the walls, gets it done for his family. And that to me speaks volumes. when a dude like Ireland said what he said, that to me is a bigger problem than right here.
Will Justin Fields be the second best quarterback in year two?
Quarterback.
The second best
quarterback.
Second year quarterback. Quarterback. That's next on ESPN Radio Sirius XM Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, Super Bowl champion, Teddy Bruschi joins us now. What's going on, Ted?
There he Morning, is. Fellas. How we doing over there?
Doing well. Hey, Teddy, we've been talking about it today. Key had a list. Which second-year quarterback will have the best season?
Well, I think there are a couple obvious answers, and then there's a couple that, you know, can go either way because you wonder with their talent how far they can take their teams. I think obvious you're talking Mac Jones and the progression he should have with the Patriots and what they added to him in terms of Devontae Parker, things like that. Also, Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. Super excited to see what Doug Peterson can do with him. The two wild cards I'm talking about, of course, are Fields and Wilson with the Jets because, you know, you're talking about different philosophies or different approaches in terms of what they gave those quarterbacks. Justin Fields, is the cupboard still bare? Can his talent overcome that? And then there's Zach Wilson, who he pretty much has everything there for him now. I wouldn't say everything, but the situation looks great for him. Started to look good towards the end of last year as a defender watching him. It's like, yeah, okay, the kid's starting to figure some things out. I like Wilson towards the end of last season. So Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, how far can they take their teams is a question mark, absolutely. But Jones and Lawrence, definitely, I think it would be out of those two.
You know, Teddy, I'm going to go with T-Law in Trevor Lawrence as our producer gave him a nickname that might stick if he has a good season. Based on what you said with Doug Peterson, you think about Doug Peterson, you think about the fact that they went out there and they got Christian Kirk, they went out there and got Zay Jones, they paid big money, and then they got a solid running game over the last couple of years. Even under Urban Meyer, they ran the ball pretty well. So when you look at that, I think Doug Peterson, being an ex-quarterback himself, he had Carson Wentz at times looking like a future Hall of Fame quarterback. He took a guy like Nick Foles and won a Super Bowl. So I like him as the number one guy. Look, in Trey Lance's situation and Zach Wilson's situation, unlike Justin Fields for me, Teddy, Justin Fields just feels like he's going to have a good season. Not necessarily statistically. He may not put up 4,000 yards in the air, but just a solid, sound season based on what they're going to do on defense, what they're trying to do on the offensive side of the ball. That's why I had him at number two in my top five ranking or top six ranking this morning.
Yeah, Key, I agree with you saying. I mean, this kid's a talented kid, obviously. I just look at the games as they start to play them, how much is Justin Fields going to be counted on to win those games? Like, okay, we're down by 10. We're down by 14. We can't keep this close. So all the plans that we had to, you know, take care of you with the play calling, we can't do that anymore. So you got to beat them with your arm, and you got to go out there and put the cape and do something like that. That type of situation, if Chicago isn't successful as a team, and, you know, based on last year, I know they've done some positive things this offseason, but still, I mean, he may be called upon to bring them out of a hole, and I just don't know if he's ready for that, and that can sort of stunt his development. Yeah. One thing on the Trevor Lawrence thing, I think Trevor is the type of guy that needs an environment that's positive, that needs an environment that, I don't know, I'll use the word toxic. And last year, was it that way at times? Absolutely, with Urban Meyer. So to have Trevor in an environment that he feels comfortable to progress and learn as a quarterback, I think that'll be his biggest positive, instead of everybody, Christian Kirk, all of the talent that they have there that they've brought in, the new faces. It's how that organization is now, you know, viewed and also handled with Doug Peterson. That's going to be a big advantage for him.
You know, Teddy, continuity is so important for young quarterbacks and them learning the scheme over time. That's why Josh Allen was so successful in Buffalo, the time spent with Brian Daboll and his ability to comprehend that as he progressed. When you look at Justin Fields, what is a realistic expectation for this young quarterback considering his situation has changed?
Now, why does the word that comes into my mind is survive? I don't know why, because you bring it, man. How many times have we seen this, fellas, where a talented quarterback comes in and then over his first, second, third, fourth year, you're talking about multiple offensive coordinators, no continuity like you're talking about, Jay, and all of a sudden you got this talented quarterback that we're wondering whatever happened to him. He's there right now for me. I mean, it's imperative. I think it's Getsy, the offensive coordinator there. How do they handle this kid, and can he handle it?
The great Teddy Bruschi, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Teddy. As always, Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, Ben Simmons, and much more talk coming up.
Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, the podcast.